On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we soak up all the joy of the Raiders being 2-0. We'll look at how the national media looks at Derek Carr, John Gruden's subtle philosophy changes, and we preview Raiders versus Dolphins. Also, Jimmy Smith pays his debt. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. He's Juan Soto. I'm RJ Clifford. Let's have some fun today. Raiders 2-0. I wonder what it's like when your NFL team loses a game. I don't know what that's like. It's been so long. It's very weird. Like, it's got to be a jarring sensation to be like a Chiefs fan or a Chargers fan, or, you know, when your team's only 500, that's got to be jarring. That's got to suck. I don't know what that's like. I want to say I almost feel bad for him. Not true at all, but it's a foreign idea to me, having a loss, you know?
Yeah, I can't even describe it. I can't even describe how it would feel to lose to a team right now. I think we can go on the field to beat anybody. Have that puffy chest. Puff it.
Right? Talk with the chest. You can smell the autumn wind in the air when the Raiders are doing well. So, like, I don't listen to, like, a whole lot of mainstream general sports stuff because I'm very, like, specific with my sports. Like, I only watch, like, MMA, NFL, college ball. I don't watch, like, baseball, basketball, stuff like that. So there's, like, a lot of, like, fluff I don't care about. But every time I turn on, you know, an AM station, a sports station or something like that, like, about, you know, you leave it on for about 5 to 10 minutes, there's, like, a 50-50 chance there's going to be some John Gruden talk, some Derek Carr talk, Max Crosby's pass rush talk. Like, it's When the Raiders are doing well, everyone wants to jump in on it because the fan base is so big and so rabid. Like, these radio hosts, like, they're no dummies, especially the big ones. They look at their ratings and, like, oh, from 10:17 to 10:24 when I was talking about Derek Carr, ratings went up 12%. Let's talk about that more tomorrow, right? And that's what we're seeing is it's kind of – I get that they're just, like, sucking at the teat of Raider Nation for those ratings and those clicks, but I like it. I like to know that we're being appreciated and our teats are getting sucked on.
I like my teats sucked on.
Yeah.
So look, all these radio guys, RJ included, they're ratings whores. They'll do what gets ratings. That's what they'll focus on.
I will jerk off three dicks of ratings at any given time.
One with his butt cheeks. Yep. Like, that's why you see ESPN in Canada is like 90% hockey. Because that's the ratings up there, right? And they know for a fact that when you lead with the Raiders, there's a lot of Raider fans out there, and the Raider fans are going to love it. But whoever's done a Raider, there's no poll, there's no, like, middle ground. There's, like, no one says, the Raiders. Either love the Raiders or you hate the Raiders, right? And as much as you like your best friend kicking someone's ass, you like to see your worst enemy getting their ass kicked. Okay, so you build that emotion. You don't want to have an emotionless section of your broadcast. You want to hit some nerve one way or the other, and the Raiders do it. And every, you know, NFL primetime, the matchup shows, all the daily NFL shows, they all lead with the Raiders. So we're the talk of the town right now. We're the big dick swinging on the streets right now.
Cox of the walk. Yeah.
Whack.
And, you know, I'm never really, like, that big into, like, power rankings. Like, you know, I'll look at it every now and then just kind of see, like, what people think. You know, it's not like college football where the rankings, like, genuinely matter, right? It's just like power rankings. Like, all right, the Raiders are always underestimated. Okay, whatever. That's good because, like, we're underdogs all the time. We're, like, -6 point underdogs against the Steelers. Like, good. I can get a better line when I bet my team. Yeah, right. So I'm down for people to just, like, not like the Raiders. Fine. Do it at your own peril. But I feel like there was a lot of people feeling like the Ravens went on Monday night was an aberration. Like, it was like, oh, you know, they got lucky. It was a weird game at the end, overtime, turnovers. Okay, like, they beat a good team, but whatever. Then the Ravens the next week go and beat Kansas City, who everyone's been jerking off for seasons, and I guess I understand why. And then the Raiders beat the Steelers, who were big favorites over us, and they came off a win over the Bills. And it's almost like people are like forced to sort of take the Raiders seriously. But I feel like the general mood from general sports is like, okay, I can't argue with their results, who they beat and how those other teams have performed, but they're still the Raiders. So I'm going to be cautiously excited about them. That's kind of how I feel the general vibe about the Raiders has been.
I mean, from the outside looking in, I don't blame them. You know, like, who wants to get burned again? Who wants to say in week three, week four, oh, these Raider teams are a contender for the Super Bowl or a strong contender for the playoffs and this and that, and then have them finish 8-8?
Yeah.
You know, it's happened like 2 years in a row now. So I understand in that case, but you can't argue with those other four teams that you mentioned. Those are all teams that were perennial playoff teams, teams that were looking to go deep in the playoffs and be in title contention. So, you know, NFL math really doesn't work all that well, but
yeah,
I mean, shit, we're 2-0.
The other good part about winning is you get to talk trash to your friends, which is like literally the only reason I do fantasy football. So you guys remember last week's show, I had my friend Jimmy Smith on. He's WWE Raw commentator, longtime MMA commentator, commentator for UFC, Bellator, and he has a SiriusXM radio show on the same channel I do called Unlocking the Cage, and he's a giant Steelers fan. So, hey, come on, we got the Steelers in town. Come on. And we made a little bet, and I'll let him explain exactly how it went down.
I thought the Raiders got very little credit for beating a very, very good Ravens team in their home opener. And so if obviously we don't have the podcast here to listen to, the spread was 5.5, which I thought was insane. I thought if the Steelers won, it would be by 3, maybe. I thought people were really looking past the Raiders. I didn't understand that at all. And I thought we beat the Bills. We didn't look great. Some things really have to click for us to be an even good team, let alone great. So, but I still bet like a man with RJ Clifford. Now, had I won, all he would have to do on his show today is every musical in and out that they use has to be the Steelers fight song. That was it. He had to play Steelers every single time there was music coming back from break, had to be the Steelers fight song, which like a man, he accepted. Mine was, RJ Clifford said, I'm going to write something out and you have to read it on your show. On your show, you have to read it. So RJ sent it to me and I have to read it.
Okay. So before I play it.
Fucking RJ, goddammit.
I got him. Tingling. Okay. Before I play it. You notice how he was kind of trying to downplay, like I knew the Steelers were going to lose. Like, oh, we were big favorites. We shouldn't have been that favorite. The Raiders weren't getting enough credit for beating the Ravens. He was trying to take the edge off a little bit. He was trying to take some of the he's not going to welch. Jimmy Smith is a man of his word, and there is 0% chance he would welch on the bet. But if he can take some of my joy out of it, if he can suck some of the like pure existential happiness I get from forcing him to say what he's about to say, he will. And he did. You know, am I the only one that noticed that? Or am I being overly sensitive here?
No, yeah, he was definitely doing that. I call that the Frank Mir approach.
Okay.
Whenever, like, he beats somebody, he talks them up. Like, oh, yeah, he's an amazing fighter. He's this, he's that. And he was, you know, when he beat Brock Lesnar, oh, he was just a huge favorite in this match, and this
we lost, but we lost to the best, you know.
Yeah, he always talks someone up winnerly. He talks them up, so it's like he talks himself up by talking the other guy up that he just beat.
So, but with that said, he delivered, and so this is what diehard Steelers fan Jimmy Smith said on his radio show, SiriusXM radio show, yesterday.
The Raiders are God's team. And my team, I was forced to wipe away my tears with my terrible towel and accept the fact that RJ was right then, now, and always. I should have known that someone as handsome, charming, and definitely not an asshole as RJ would never steer me wrong. I'm ashamed I wasted my life cheering on the Steelers when I could have had myself and my sail to catch the autumn wind to glory. From the bottom of my heart, I thank RJ for helping me find the way. And I just hope he'll forgive me for a lifetime of questionable football judgment. Love you, RJ. But above all, I love the Raiders. There we go.
God, that's a beautiful sound.
Oh my God, that was fucking awesome.
Am I a poet or what? Like, if I'm trying to get, if I'm trying to make a Steelers fan sound super thirsty and sound like a Raiders fan, I feel like I'm like Socrates.
Well, you, when you're pumping yourself,
I'm Shakespearean.
Up,
yeah,
you're pretty good.
I am. Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's my favorite. It's my favorite topic. RJ. Yeah.
J-I.
I like how he. I like how he didn't welch on his bet like some people I know. Soto. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, like you.
I did my push-ups.
I like how when we bet the Jake Paul, Tyron, Ben Askren fight, it literally took you like a week and a half kicking and screaming to finally do your anytime push-ups. And yet Jimmy Smith, the successful, fantastic, professional broadcaster, immediately, right away, first opportunity he had, he delivered on his debt. That's the man you should look up to, Soto. I know you look up to me, but I want you to look up to Jimmy as well.
I'm up about 3 inches taller than you, so I do not look up to you, number one. Number two, I am neither professional nor successful.
Which is why you should behave like Jimmy. Do as he does.
I did my push-ups.
Yeah, kicking and screaming, and you acted like you were doing me a favor when you finally paid your debt.
That's my payback. That's my payback. Jimmy's payback to you was downplaying the whole thing and
take
like,
the joy out of it. Yeah.
So my payback was making you score for it, but I gave it to you. Okay. I gave it to you. All right. Shit.
You like to tease me a little bit.
A hoe only gives it up on the first night. All right.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I am a hoe though. I'm not gonna trip.
But you know, like, I'm keeping that sound forever. Jimmy's saying, "I love you, RJ, but most of all, I love the Raiders."
That should be our outro every fucking every
show. Steelers fans loving the Raiders.
He didn't say we couldn't use it.
So he's not the only one. The Raiders have gone from the ESPN power rankings. They were 25th preseason, 19th after week one, 10th now. They're in the top 10 in the ESPN power rankings. And it was this is a good reminder of how right we are and how incorrect the outside was looking in when, like, look, I didn't think we'd start off like this dominant, right? 2-0 is like possible. I thought the Steelers game, when we started it on the calendar, would be a really, really tough one. Short week. Ben Roethlisberger starts out the season healthy. Cross country game, right? It's incredible defensive line and pass rush from the Steelers with our semi-new O-line, like, oh, God, we can do this, but it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know that, like, all the things that outside people were talking about the Raiders, oh, their offensive line is going to be atrocious. They bailed on it. They're not great, but they're not atrocious. They're average. They're serviceable, right?
They're average, yeah. I would say
average. They're getting the job done. Oh, Derek Carr, he's terrible. Oh, man, he's a tier three quarterback. He can't put a team on his shoulders and win a game. Yes, he can. And he's done it twice in a row. Oh, their defense is the worst in the league. It's so awful. Like, they're not going to turn this around. Paul Bradley, like, Bradley can't do this that quick. They're not world beaters yet, nor did we ask them to be. But we're getting a pass rush. We're getting turnovers. We're not getting beat deep all the time. We're not missing tackles to the same extreme. It's so funny how, like, we gauge things in a certain way. Like, if we were like the Steelers, if we were like Steelers fans the past 15 years and we look at this defense, we'd be like, oh man, they're falling apart. But we're Raiders fans, so we're like, oh God, our defense is playing great, right? All the things that like, the outside people looking in thought, okay, the Raiders, they should be like bottom fourth in the league. No, you're wrong. All that analysis you got from the outside, us on the inside, we knew what was up.
Yeah, as far as the defense goes, they're giving up, what, 22 points a game or some shit like that? 22, 23 points a game now? It's something pretty like good, that. Dude. That's pretty fucking good.
Well, against the best rushing team in football and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback with good weapons in Roethlisberger.
Yeah, he's got really good. That's a really good receiving core out there, and our DBs did a really good job against them. And it starts up front. We knew that the defense was going to be much improved, mostly because of just the leader and the scheme. Like, we knew that Bradley was going to be able to get the ear of these guys, and he was going to be, he's what's the word I'm using for looking for?
Get it's, them to buy in.
Yeah, he gets everyone on his side, and he makes, he says things so they make sense, and it, okay, this is what we're gonna do, and here's the result. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, we saw that clip when the Raiders give up that long touchdown against the Niners. Oh no, that was against the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. You know, Gruden was staring everyone down and trying to kill everybody, and Bradley's like, no, it's okay, we're good, don't worry, this is what we got to fix. And when you don't play scared, when you don't play like, not really scared, but like, I don't want to hear any bullshit, when you mm-hmm. when you play like, okay, I know my assignment, I'm just gonna go get in there and go, it's a lot easier to play. It's a lot easier to play, and it's a lot easier to execute.
Yeah, and it's been the and it's been Gus Bradley's MO for over a decade, right? Like, we're not gonna overcomplicate things. We're gonna have everyone buy in, move, don't think as much, and it's all predicated on a defensive line where four down linemen can cause the havoc and get the pressure that we need to make everything else work, right? But it's keeping the big plays from happening. It's, you know, those kind of, don't lose the game for us, right? That's the, and which is all we really need from the defense, right?
It's just,
hey, just don't completely implode. We've been saying all offseason, oh my God, can you imagine if the defense was average or just slightly below average? We, like, that was like best case scenario in our minds. They're better than even we thought they could be.
Yeah, you know, this start has been really good. They wouldn't have won the games without key stops mm-hmm. at big moments. Yeah. And I think the defense this year is helping us win the games, especially against the Steelers. We didn't put up, you know, 35, 40 points against Steelers. Like, we had a late field goal, but I mean, we put up 23 points before that late field goal. It wasn't, you know, that's a little bit below average as far as scoring goes. We had to have that defense in order to win that game. And as years passed, we were waiting on the opposing team to make a mistake for us to capitalize in order to stop them. And we weren't stopping them. We weren't changing anything in the opposing offense's game plans at all with our defense.
So the defense has come along, but all the attention has been on Derek Carr, and rightfully so. He's been pressured on 28.7% of his passes, and he's leading the league in pass attempts, which isn't a great thing, but he's doing it well. 93 pass attempts, 817 passing yards, most in the league, averaging 8.8 yards per pass, eighth in the league. And that's something I know, Soto, that you've been on him about for a long time, is just like, hey, push the ball down the field a little bit, let's move a little bit. Certainly Carr has left some yardage on the field at times. I think he got too much of the blame for conservative play calling. I think that's very much Gruden, very much not really having true weapons outside of Waller. But because guys are starting to kind of develop a little bit, we saw, we'll get to Ruggs here in a second. Obviously, Waller's Waller. Moreau's there, not getting his snaps taken away from Jason Witten. Bryan Edwards has come improving a little bit, right? Renfro's always Renfro. And an offensive line that's really struggling to run block, and Josh Jacobs, who was injured, Derek Carr, like, put the game on his shoulders. Like, he put the team on his shoulders, and that's something that all his naysayers say he couldn't do. Oh, you know, he can dink and dunk, and he'll be all right. He's put back-to-back games on his shoulders and won it for us.
Yeah, and I just want to make it perfectly clear. I was not one of those that said he couldn't win games for us. I was actually clamoring for him. Clamoring for him to be a bigger part of the offense, not just dink and dunk, but when he did push the ball down the field more, he was more successful. That's when he was that MVP candidate, when he was pushing the ball down the field.
Yeah. So you can see the long touchdown pass to Ruggs, the 15-yard touchdown pass, and then just look at this spread just everywhere. Obviously, the short passing game kind of has to be the Raiders' run game, so that's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And why would it when you've got great slot guys like Renfro, Drake coming out of the backfield with short plays? Like, that's still going to be a big part of it. But now you've got to worry about Ruggs deep, Waller intermediate, the incredible route running of Hunter Renfro, Kenyon Drake out of the backfield, a third string tight end you have to cover now. Like, that's what I'm talking about, is like, last week against the Ravens, we threw the ball to Waller 19 times. And what do we say? okay, if you're not gonna defend him, if it's working, throw it to him 20 times, 30 times, 40 times. I don't care. This time, only got 7 targets, but the ball got spread around. Career day for Ruggs, 7 receptions. So now it's just like, all right, you want to just worry about Waller? We'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this chart here, you see that there's 13 passes at or beyond 10 yards mm-hmm. on here. So, and one over on the left side there on the sideline, just under. So around 14 that were right at the 10-yard mark and further. And that's what we're looking for. That's what I was looking for him yeah. to look down the field. We'll get to it a little bit later, but that long pass to Ruggs, the play there, the smart play, the quote-unquote smart play, would have been Renfro yeah. over the middle. He was wide open.
It would have been a first down. It would have been a first down, open, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? He's looking deep first, which is what he should do, and I think that's when Ruggs is going to get more chances, and Edwards as well.
So now that Derek Carr is doing what he's doing, he's getting the attention of everyone. What's your big criticisms of Derek Carr through 2 weeks?
We'll get to that. We have the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Okay. Well, let's do that then. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Raiders over Steelers. What do you got, Soto?
All right. The good. Derek Carr, 28 of 37, 382 yards, 2 touchdowns. 126.2 passer rating, and here's the saucy one that I like.
Yeah,
10.3 average yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about right there. So excellent job there by Derek Carr. Henry Ruggs the third.
It's real quick. It's crazy to me. He only threw it 37 times. It felt like way more.
Yeah, I did.
Way more.
Did. Because
that's a good number. Like that's about as many attempts. You know, 37 to 40. I feel like that's where Carr should be, right? Like, run game's still big. Feed Waller. Keep throwing deep to Ruggs. Keep the defense honest. Like, 37 to 40 attempts. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's where he needs to be. Mm-hmm. So Henry Ruggs, 5 receptions, 113 yards, a touchdown, and a gaudy 22.6 yards per catch. Mm-hmm. So excellent job by Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, can we just talk about that that touchdown again, please? And just like what a thing of beauty it was. Like, look at that. Double covered. Carr is like watching the safety, like trying to keep the safety honest by keeping an eye on Waller. And so the safety's just a half step behind him as Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, and that's not Ruggs a slouch either. Bombs. That's not a slouch safety. That's Minka Fitzpatrick. That's
yeah.
That's,
the okay, there you go.
In the league. So the thing is, Minka
Fitzpatrick, and look, the protection broke down right away.
Yeah. So when we look at that again, Minka Fitzpatrick is doing the right thing. That's his key mm-hmm. right there is Waller. That's the way they're covering Waller is they're keeping him over the top. And that's an excellent play design to have Ruggs go. And because the corner thinks when they lined up, Bryan Edwards was on the line of scrimmage, and normally that's the guy that goes deep. Ruggs was towards the sideline, and he was back a yard off the line of scrimmage. He's not normally the guy that goes deep. He's normally the guy that crosses or does a quick hitch or something like that. So they mm-hmm. kind of fooled the corner into thinking he was going to go across and not go deep. And when he did go across the field deep on that deep slant, he thought that Minka Fitzpatrick was going to be there, but his first key is Waller, like it should be. And so it was a great play design to get Ruggs open.
Yeah. And Carr said that in the post-fight presser, how normally that's the case where like Ruggs isn't even in the progression. He's just like there, just clearing everybody out, being fast, making room. And I think that's and now he was. And so that kind of goes more to what I've been saying about the John Gruden, Derek Carr relationship is like, absolutely, Carr has left some guys open deep. Like he certainly has, but it's different when it's just like, all right, I'm deathly afraid to throw this guy I'm supposed to. He's not even in my progression. Like I have to like drastically make a huge change to make Ruggs going deep a pass. I'm not supposed to. It's like very unusual. Now it feels like that's changed. I think finally Gruden has been someone got in Gruden's ear some, like, either he like saw some metrics, because all the metrics have been pointing to like, all right, Derek Carr in a clean pocket is amazing deep, like super accurate, fantastic. The pocket's clean, he's throwing deep. He's, I think it was the most accurate clean pocket deep passer last season.
Over 20 yards.
And so now, so I think, I don't know what's more likely. I don't know if like Gruden like actually like talked to a nerd who like showed him the metrics, or if Gruden was like going through tape and like saw all these guys open.
He had a feeling.
And
he had a hunch.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like he had a gut feeling what like I learned on a TI-83 calculator. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
right.
I don't care how he got there, but I feel like Gruden is finally like letting Carr cook a little bit. We're just like, okay, all this evidence says you can throw the ball deep. Ruggs is coming along. Edwards is coming along. Waller's undefendable. Okay. Let's open this throttle a little wider.
Yeah, as Minka Fitzpatrick on that play, his first key is Waller. His second key is that lead receiver on the line, which is Bryan Edwards. So when he goes across the middle short, he's like, all right, cool. I just got a key on Waller. And then he looks over and he's like, oh, shit. I'm even. Mm-hmm. Or even one. When he's facing the line of scrimmage, keying in on Waller, and then Ruggs has his back to the line of scrimmage running the opposite way, that's not even going to be a contest there. Yeah. Ruggs is going to run right past anybody in the league like that. So that split second where he keyed in on Waller, that's all he needed. And he wasn't like super duper wide, like Cooper Kupp wide open, how he gets sometimes.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, he had a step on the corner and he had a step and a half, maybe two steps on Minka Fitzpatrick. He wasn't completely wide open. And that's all it took. Just that little hesitation doing his job, what he's supposed to do, for the scheme to get him open.
And that was a little bit more trust in Carr, right? Because before he'd throw to Ruggs deep every now and then, but Ruggs had to be like high school football open. Like he needed to be like no one within 10 yards of him. Carr was like, okay, there we go. Now, like that was a semi, I think contested catch is the wrong word, but like Carr released when Ruggs was still covered. But he's just like, all right, I'm just going to put some air under it, threw it like 40 yards, and we'll let Ruggs go get it, right? Well, instead of just like breakdown in defense, Ruggs is wide open, I'll put it to him. It's like, okay, I'll put him in a position to succeed, and we'll let Ruggs do the work from there.
Yeah. Once he saw the corner on Ruggs' hip, he's like, all right, he's going to be able to outrun him. And then he looks and he sees Minka's face and he sees Ruggs' back. All right, I'm good. I'm going to let this one fly and let Ruggs get it. And he did.
How pissed is Zay Jones watching Ruggs be good? He's like, damn it. I've been up at 5 a.m. every morning catching passes from Carr, and all of a sudden, and now Ruggs can catch these passes. Now he trusts Ruggs?
He got damn his it. Shine. He got his damn shine. It. He's all right.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to the good. Daniel Carlson again. Mm-hmm. 4 for 4 on field goal attempts, 2 extra points, 14 total points. He was the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. Well deserved. Daniel Carlson, the good. All right. Let's see this.
How about Daniel Carlson, the great? I mean,
dude, he's just money, bro.
Picking up him in my fantasy football leagues was the biggest no-brainer move I had in these drafts. Like, he led the league in points last season, almost the entire season. He's the all-time SEC points leader. He's been automatic. And, you know, I wasn't hoping that this would be the case, but we know the Raiders' struggles in the red zone last season. If that continued, all right. I've got Carlson picking up all those field goals for us. But it hasn't even been like him saving us in the red zone. He's been bombing some 40, 50 yarders.
Dude, he's money. I don't know if anyone has been to Pittsburgh in like the late summer. It's ass out there, dude. It's hot. It's muggy. It's just shitty. It's not an easy place to kick. That air is heavy. And he was booming out there. So that's it for the offensive special teams. The good on defense, Denzel Perryman, 12 total tackles. He was all over the place. Mm-hmm. Great job for Denzel Perryman on that. Max Crosby, again, 5 quarterback hits, 1 tackle for a loss. He was in Big Ben's face all day, causing havoc. Solomon Thomas.
Max Crosby leads the league in pressures, 19. And that's generally like a better gauge of how good your pass rush is, because sacks, like obviously you want the sack, right? And guys who get lots of sacks are fantastic defensive linemen. Great, you know, great getting the quarterback. But the gap between like a sack and a pressure could be like minuscule, right? Like it could be so many little things that like just didn't go your way. Hey, you know, rushing Big Ben, who's super experienced and gets that ball out fast, is different than rushing like, you know, like a Josh Allen or somebody who's still kind of learning how to move in the pocket, right? Like the same exact skill set could result in a sack somewhere, but not a sack somewhere else. The pressure is always the same. So when you're, especially when you're talking about big numbers, when you're talking about like really like towards the end of the season, when guys are like, all right, he had 72 pressures, 88 pressures, whatever it may be. That could mean that like someone with 100 pressures could have four sacks or 14 in a season, right? Like,
it's that close.
The gap is that small. So like, as much as I'd prefer Crosby to get like those four sack seasons, like he did against, was it the Bengals or whoever, or force that game. The steady pressures is the best sign that he's getting the job done. He's not getting quite across the finish line in time.
Yeah, he's getting the job consistently. So moving forward, Solomon Thomas, two sacks and a tackle for a loss. So great job on the inside. And that's all just effort and pressure. Big Ben was running for his life out there. And he knows how to move in the pocket. He's a big guy. He can see over the rush. But when no one's open, so credit a lot of those to the secondary. And speaking of the secondary, Trayvon Mullen, two passes of defense and an interception. So he was around the ball. They were throwing to him a lot, and he came through. So that's the good.
What's next? The
bad. Let's take a look.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the bad. Corey Littleton, run defense again. The second week in a row, man. He two badly missed, badly played runs. One was on a third and long, deep in the Steelers' territory. Harris was able to pick up 14 on that carry. Mm-hmm. He just got sucked in again, like he did last week. He got sucked in and couldn't get off the block. And Harris was untouched for the first 7 to 8 yards of that carry. And the second one was the inside handoff to Juju Smith-Schuster. It was him and Juju in that hole together, and he just whiffed the tackle, man. He was right there to tackle him, and he whiffed it. So those are two pretty bad plays. Two weeks in a row, we need to clean that up. Now,
they just restructured Littleton's contract for cap reasons. It's going to be harder to cut him moving forward. Yeah, he's got like $5 million extra bucks or something out of his cap for. I don't know what they're going to do with that money. They're freeing up money for something. Maybe it'll come out by the time the show's out.
Lineman or something like that, or I mean,
probably. Hopefully, hopefully some
linemen. Right. Well, speaking of second week in a row, Alex Leatherwood. Again, and now this is only in one half of play, mind you. All right, guys. He had a 32.4 overall PFF rating. That was by far the lowest on the team. His pass blocker rating was 14. That's how bad he was pass blocking.
14 out of 15? 14 out of 20? Yeah,
14 out of 100.
14 out of 100? That's atrocious.
Really bad. Now, granted, he went up against TJ Watt most of the time, and then after TJ Watt got hurt, Melvin Ingram, which are two elite pass rushers in the league. But, dude, 14, that's bad. That means almost every single play he was giving up a pressure or he got beat even if the ball was out. He was not holding his block for, you know, the 2.5 or 2.6 seconds that they require. He gave up one sack, one hurry, and two pressures. So for four total pressures, he got two penalties again, and that's in one half a play. So one half a play, he did not play well. It's the pass blocking is a severe liability, pass blocking wise. He's hurt. He had an oblique injury. Hopefully he gets better, and hopefully he gets better because this is.
Did Brandon Parker not play him? I think Brandon Parker outplayed him, huh?
Yeah. I think so. I think Parker's.
And it's not going to get easier. Like, you're going to put your best rusher against Leatherwood. You're not going to put him against Colton Miller. Like, you're going to go for that weak link, right? At least it's on Derek Carr's like open side, not his blind side. But like, this isn't a problem that's going away. You know, like,
not anytime soon.
I still want Leatherwood in there. Like, even if Parker plays 10% better, right? I still want Leatherwood in there for those reps, for real game experiences. Like, still like. Come on, man. Like, here you go. Let's give you some time. Let's get some practice out there. Like, Colt Miller's rookie year, he was terrible too, right? Let's get your practice. Again, the only coach I have 100% faith in on the Raiders is Tom Cable, right? So if anyone can get this guy going, whatever Cable wants to do with him, do it. And it seems to be like, hey, get him in there even if he's playing bad.
Yeah, we know that Cable's going to maximize Leatherwood's talent. It's the same shit, though, man. He's reaching a lot. His butt out. Chest, you know, reaching forward, just not squared up.
You'd make a great stripper. Great stripper position, right?
Face down, ass up.
That's the way he likes to not pass block.
Yeah. Okay, one more bad.
Huh?
Unfortunately.
I know you couldn't resist.
Derek Carr. Well, dude, listen. He had two more fumbles again.
Yeah.
He fumbled the ball again. That's three fumbles in two games.
Yeah.
That's we talked about him, and he talked about working on it more often and always having the ball in your hands and keying on it. He's already got three fumbles in two games. So
that's legit something to watch. So like a buddy of mine, he's a Bucs fan. He tweeted when the Steelers closed it to like within two, he tweeted something like, "Oh, time for a trademark Derek Carr interception." I said, tweet back, "F you." But this is the thing is Derek Carr's picks haven't been the major issue. It's the timely fumbles that are the problem. But because they're not getting recovered by the defense, it's not making a headline. It's not going viral. It's kind of really not being paid attention to. It still seems like the biggest issue Derek Carr has is still the biggest issue Derek Carr has. Like, it doesn't seem like that's something that's been fixed, his fumbles. It's just been band-aided over by the fact that we're recovering them.
Yeah, it's if we would have lost those three fumbles, it'd be a lot bigger, a lot different story in Raider Nation. So that brings us to the ugly.
Okay.
And the ugly fucking Trey Turner spitting in Solomon Thomas's face. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then fucking Tomlin, like, fucking Solomon spit on him first. Like, get the fuck out of here. There's no video evidence of Solomon Thomas spitting on Trey Turner first.
Well, there's only like one or two cameras in an NFL football game. Yeah, so it's impossible to find that.
18 different cameras on the field at one time.
8K, 3D. Yeah. If you do anything on that field, someone's going to know. I was talking to, when I worked for the UFC at lunch, I was working for a guy. He's just a utility guy when he works UFC events. But for NFL games, he does this like three-dimensional shot where like his job is like when there's like in very specific plays, you can do something with like they'll show, like the quarterback angle, and then they'll do like the camera will do like a 180 and it'll show the receiver catching the ball, and they'll do another shot where it'll be the receiver's like vision, and he's like looking and he can like see what's happening. You can like eliminate linemen to be able to get a clear line of sight, like crazy technology stuff, right? And he was talking about how like he works on that. Like, dude, that technology alone, just to do that, like 30-second highlight, 15-second video requires 18 cameras in an NFL stadium. Just to get that like 30-second thing for this one particular company to do this one particular task. If you're spitting in somebody's face, one of those 100 cameras is going to see it. And none of them did. Right? It's not like, the Immaculate Reception days where it's like, did the ball hit the ground or did it not? We just didn't catch it. Those days are long gone. Something happens on that field, there's seven cameras in HD that caught it.
Dude, they caught fucking Mark Sanchez eating a hot dog on the fucking sidelines like 7-8 years ago. Like, they're going to catch you doing something.
Yeah. Everything. The only things that don't get caught are what the NFL don't want caught. Right. Yeah. Like if it's something like private or something like shady, those are the only things that don't go caught. Like, everything that's there is going to get caught if they want it to be.
I just don't know if you're Mike Tomlin. I don't know how you argue that feverishly against him getting kicked out when they're like, dude, he's spitting the guy right in front of us. Mm-hmm. Like, we're pulling the guy apart and he walks up and spits in the guy's face. Like, what the fuck do you expect us to do?
Yeah. He didn't want to get his guard ejected. So he's just like, hey, I think what he did was like, hey, I want the other guy ejected too, because they both did it, right? So like, we're going to get both we get the 15-yard penalties, they offset, but I'm losing my guy. All right, I'm just going to cause a tissy fit until I get them taken away too.
You could only call what you see, man. If they didn't see Solomon Thomas do it, I'm not saying he did or he didn't do it, but shit, I didn't see it.
It's funny hearing opposing coaches like complain about flags in a Raider game. Like, you're going to get all the calls. Like, come on. It's the Raiders.
Just so stupid.
All right. So coming to town will be the Miami Dolphins on Sunday afternoon game. Was it 1:15 or something like that here on the West Coast? Dolphins, Raiders. We just got the report. Ian Rappaport, we're recording this on Wednesday, as always, just tweeted out not that long ago that coach Brian Flores announces that after further testing, Tua Tagovailoa has fractured ribs and won't play this week. No Tua coming to a town.
Well, I'm not sure how to feel about that. He didn't play great when he was in. And the game plan was around him. They beat the Patriots week one, but they only scored 17 points. And a lot of that was due to turnovers. Their defense getting turnovers deep in the Patriots territory. And they didn't score not one point last week. They were blanked by the Bills last week at home. And that was with a Brissett coming in with no game plan. He has a couple of packages, short yardage packages he comes in for. He came in a couple of times against the Pats, but he came in and they just did not look good at all last week against the Bills. So
I'm liking our defense against the Dolphins. And that's always it feels weird saying that because that's really never been the case last season, right? It was always
last season shit. As long as I can remember.
Last two decades, right? So now it's like, oh wow, like could we get really have an outstanding defensive performance that's going to get a lot of people paying attention, right? Crosby get one of these three sack games, how about like an interception for a touchdown, something like that. Something, you catch you bite on a slant, boom, you're going to the house. I feel like this is going to be one of those games for our defense.
Yeah. Like as much as I was talking about how the Steelers like to make games ugly and they win games ugly, they beat you up. Mm-hmm. That's what the Dolphins do. If you want to take what the Ravens do, but just not as good, and then what the Steelers do, but just not as good, that's the Dolphins.
It's like Ravens Steelers light.
Yeah, like a combination. They're just not. They do the same thing, but the one that they do exceptionally well is they create turnovers.
Yeah.
That was one of the things keeping them in the game against the Bills, and that's what won them the game against the Patriots, against the Bills in the first half at least. They were creating turnovers, man. Defensively, what I noticed is they blitz a lot, and the reason being is they don't get a lot of pressure with just their front four. So they're going to blitz a lot, and if we're going to get the running game on track, it's got to be this week. Mm-hmm. They can be run on. I mean, they were run on against the pass. They were run on against the Bills, ran on them. Mostly just set up the play action because their linebackers bite hard every single time on play action. I mean, they bite really hard on play action. And the reason for that, I think, partially, is because their secondary is so good.
Yeah.
They got Jones, McCourty. They got Howard back there. I mean, they got some good players back there, and they are ball hawks, and they like to strip the ball carrier. So there's some things that we need to worry about with them, but one thing that they don't do well whatsoever that works in our favor is they don't do a good job covering tight ends.
If only we had a really good tight end or a really good tight end crew, if only that was the case. If only, that would have been really nice to say if we had, an all-pro tight end, the best backup tight end in football. Oh, wait,
probably
we do!
Probably the best third string tight end in football.
Right? We might have the best second string and best third string tight end in football.
Yeah, so look for a big game to the tight ends. They just didn't do a good job the first 2 weeks covering what was his name? Hunter Henry and Smith in the first game. I don't even know that fucker's name from the Bills, but the motherfucker caught a touchdown. He caught a lot of balls. So the only thing I could think of that would give us any trouble is if we turn the ball over, because that's how they win the games. Is they thrive off of those turnovers, keeping a short field and keeping it. Because if you kick the ball deep and you make them, drive the length of the field, they're just not equipped to do that. They have a couple of playmakers. Gaskin, the running back, he's shifty. He's not explosive. He's steady. He's tough to get on the ground, but he's not anything more special than Harris. Harris is probably a better back than he is, and we bottled him up. Mm-hmm. Their O-line is, I would say, below average. What they would do with Tua in there, who's not going to be in there, but the reason – The way they got him a lot of time to throw the football is almost every single pass was either an RPO or off play action. Yeah. So they do that run action almost every single time he passes the ball.
Yeah.
So they create that kind of pause with the linemen and with the linebackers, and that's really how he gets the ball. It's a very kind of a college type of system that they run it well with Tua at least. I mean, Waddle is probably their biggest playmaker they have. They get him on a lot of short targets, crossing routes, screens, stuff like that. But nothing, I mean, I wouldn't put him above anyone that the Steelers had as far as talent-wise right now, at least.
Yeah,
I really don't see us having too big of a problem with them. Of course, if we shoot ourselves in the foot and we could turn the ball over, yeah, that could be a problem because they do a good job of scoring when they get turnovers, points off of turnovers. They do a good job, and that's what I said in the in the offseason. I said this is a team that I saw that was primed for a drop back, a drop off, because they don't do everything.
They were 10-6 last season.
Yeah, they don't do anything exceptionally well, but they do turn they do get a lot of turnovers, and they capitalize on that. But other than that, they're a solid team, but they're just not anything special. We beat two better teams than them.
Yeah, you're not going to get sustained success if you're banking on turnovers to get you where you want to go, right? It's just turnovers are just too random. Like, you can be ball hawks, right? Like, there's obviously defenses and DBs that are better at getting interceptions than others, and but like fumble recoveries are just random, just super random, right? Like, we were just lucky for Derek Carr to have his three fumbles be recovered. It's just dumb luck. Every team practices fumble recovery drills. I remember doing it in high school. It's all random. There's no evidence whatsoever.
How dangerous were those drills, by the way? Oh, everyone going head first into each other.
Dude, we did some shit back then. I remember before games my junior year, we would do the Oklahoma drill. Like, before, like, we just have two guys just run into each other just to get, like, jacked up and, like, you know, get the, like, you see some fighters before they fight, like, they have their coach, like, slap them just to kind of feel like, all right, like, I'm in this, you know? We would do that. Just run full steam at each other and just try to crush each other just to get us, like, jacked up before games. Back when football was football.
Yeah, back when there was no CTE.
Mm-hmm. And look at us now. Geniuses.
Professional.
You ready to do some what up windbags?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Okay. Ryan Campbell. How impressive is Hunter Renfrow? Teams are trying to beat him up, and he takes it to them every game. We didn't really talk about this on that show too much, but after the Ravens game, the Raiders sent an official like request or report or whatever to the league saying, look, here's video. Teams are trying to murder Hunter Renfrow. Like, they are out there trying to crush him. And I understand why. Like, he's very hard to cover. And he just looks like someone you can beat up. Like, he's one of the rare, because like we talk about, like, oh, like, guys look small on the football field. Like, Tyreek Hill's still a big guy in real life. Like, he's not, like, if you saw him at a bar, most people wouldn't mess with him, but he looks like a tiny little roadrunner on the football field. Hunter Renfrow's the rare football player that looks like someone you could beat up. Like, he just doesn't look physically imposing. His hair's always messed up. He's not buff at all. And so you're like, all right, he's hard as hell to cover. He's always like in the shit, right? He's always around linebackers and safeties. So let's just rough him up and get him to the point where he can't play. He has been so tough. He hasn't complained once. He was the recipient of some super huge hits, got right back up, no problem. We'll see if that does anything for other teams. Because remember last season, there was one like punt return where it was like full on helmet to helmet. Hunter went down.
Oh, got
out for a little bit. Oh, not even a flag. Nothing. Not even a flag. If that were any other team, it'd be fine. 15 yards, maybe ejection. Nope. Nothing for Hunter Renfrow.
Nothing. No justice for Hunter.
Nope. Mark Yoakum. All these comments bagging on DC the last few years, aging real well. Hey, haters, LOL. And this just kind of goes back to what I've been saying forever, is Derek Carr gets all the credit, all the blame for everything on his team. It's just always been the case. Now he's playing better now than ever, at least through these last two games, right? Clearly has. But because the defense isn't giving up 35, 40 points a game, his actual accomplishments aren't overshadowed by losses. It's, oh, they won. Let's look at the stat sheet. Whoa, Derek Carr threw for how many? Whoa, that's amazing. Oh, he's doing fantastic. It's the name of the game. He's going to get the blame. He's going to get the credit regardless of what happens on his end.
There's a big difference between having the potential to play well and playing well,
mm-hmm.
right? There's or playing to that potential. And I think that was the biggest thing underlying all the Derek Carr hate.
Mm-hmm.
But it manifested itself in different ways. My hate with Derek Carr was always the fact that he was capable of doing so much more with the football, but wasn't. I felt like he was playing scared. I felt like he was not playing to win. He was playing not to lose a lot of times. And that was my criticism. If I'm gonna go out there, and that's where the whole game manager tag came into play, because I don't know that we've seen other quarterbacks that you would tag as elite in the past ever playing that way. And he's not playing that way this year. He's going for broke. He's letting the ball fly. He's putting the guys in position to get those 50-50 balls. And, you know, he's being more aggressive, which is all I've been asking for.
Dutch Master 710. Last year, our defensive line depth was Mo Hurst, Kendall Vickers, Chris Smith. This year, Quentin Jefferson, Darius Fallon, Solomon Thomas. There you go. You wondering where the pass rush came from? Yannick Ngakoue, healthy Max Crosby, and depth in the interior. There it is. That's what Gus Bradley wanted. That's what he needed, and that's what he got.
Yeah, Darius Filon, he was a beast, and he just he got popped for weed or something like that a couple years ago. Is that what it was?
I don't know. I've lost track of all the players who've been popped for weed.
Let's see.
You know how dumb you have to be to get popped for weed in the NFL? Like, you know when you're getting tested. You know what you're getting tested for. There's no drug tests in the NFL. There's just IQ tests.
Let's see.
Yeah. And if you fail a drug test, you failed an IQ test. It's not like the UFC where they're going to knock on your door at 6 a.m. on a Tuesday with a syringe and a jug for you to piss.
Never mind. He was released in August of 2019 following an arrest for an assault with a deadly weapon.
Okay, a little different.
A little different. My bad.
Now, was the deadly weapon like a bong that he like broke the top off and tried to stab somebody with? Because then that would make you half right.
Well, obviously, either it was the charges were dropped or it was settled out of court or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's on our team now, and I'm happy for it.
With his act together. All right. The next time you see us will be on Sunday. We do live post game shows. Every time now. I'm back from Costa Rica, right? So I'll be back here, normal spot, shirt on, all my gear, paying attention like I'm supposed to. And I'm not going to guarantee I'm not going to have any beers in me, but I will be here in my home base. And until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel as well. The Autumn Windbags YouTube channel is fantastic. A lot of bonus content on there for you that we think you would love. Until next time, later.